to Very Amusing, your one-stop shop for the stories, secrets, and shenanigans of a popcorn-fueled theme park journalist. I'm Carly Wiesel, and I am joined with the famous Wiesel trilogy. I got Pearl in my lap, and I got...
Hi, it's me. I'm here. Yay!
Mom has been upgraded to the top of the show. She'll still be at the back of the show, but for today, she's in the house. We're hanging out with Pearl. She's visiting me. She's doing me a favor watching Pearl while I get work done, so I figured, why not include them in the intro? Why not? Why not?
Just multitasking my daughter. She's feeding babies. She has me making her crazy. She's got her husband running around. And then there's Morty.
Yeah, Morty's scratching down the door.
It's a full house. Morty French kissed me yesterday. It was crazy.
Oh, ooh la la. Is a romance brewing in the house? Who knows?
They say they're very clean.
Okay, it's fine. We love him. He's part of our family. He's allowed to kiss anybody in the mouth.
That's true.
As long as
talking, so we got inside my mouth. That's not cool.
Okay, anyway, Mom's been visiting me for a few days. We went to a very fun event over the weekend with Pearly Girly. We went to a Wrangler Barbie event, which was in Los Angeles, like somewhere in Los Feliz, if you're familiar. But it was like a private horseback riding club. So there were all these beautiful horses and all these very cool ladies doing cool horse tricks. And we got to chain stitch a jacket and
we put Pearl
on a pony. I held on to her, don't worry, we didn't just like run her into the night, but I really want her to be a horse girl, and so it was exciting because I planned on her being a horse girl, and this hopefully she will look back on this day in 20 years and be like, that's the first day I was on a horse, even though it was a pony. I think it's the same thing, it counts. But we started the origin story this weekend, so it was worth it.
And she was decked out in pink for Barbie. She was the cutest little thing you ever saw.
Yes, I do regularly yell at my mom and tell her she's buying too many clothes and she needs to stop. And then when I need something, the perfect item is there and she bought it. So
that's why I don't listen. That's why I just keep buying and eventually something's going to work.
That is true. Okay, but this is not the Wiesel Family Happy Hour. We are going to switch over to the podcast shortly. We just wanted to say hello from all of us.
Yay, this is so nice. I miss you all so much. Write in, call in, and I'll come back. I promise.
Come back. You're on the edge of the show every week.
I'll come back more. I'll do a whole nother third episode.
Okay. This woman just wants me to take her on a cruise, okay?
Yeah, I'm going for December 2024. I'm really doing my prayers.
If we are invited to the Disney Treasure, the full fam will be there. Fingers crossed. I really can't wait to get on that ship. I want to go. That ship looks great. I'm sorry. That ship looks great. The colors look great. Oh, Pearl's on the keyboard. Okay, we got to go. Talk to you soon in a second.
I love you. Bye.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week, we have illusionist, magician, and mind reader Chris Cox gabbing about the best themed entertainment you've ever seen, and ones you will be desperate to by the end of this. Chris and I have been internet pals for years. I'm honestly so charmed that he listens to my podcast. Yes, our guest is a listener in the Very Amusing universe, just like the rest of us, and it was delightful to catch up on the pod and discuss all things magic. We talk about theme parks, of course, but wound up talking a bit more about themed immersive entertainment, which he knows firsthand because he creates it. He created so many things that I couldn't even keep them all in this episode, but we're talking stage surprises, effects, and even, okay, if you go to a fancy meal, like a really fancy like anniversary dinner, and you pay in advance, he invented that as part of bringing theatrics into high-end restaurants. This dude does it all. You'll hear about everything this week, including how he's consulted at one of the best restaurants in the world, and even about how he works on the effects and illusions in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the Harry Potter stage show, which, if you've seen it, You know the reason it's still running and the reason it's so exceptional is because of those effects. And sidebar, small sidebar, personal note, because we mentioned Harry Potter, I do have to hit my Trans Lives Matter and this podcast supports them button to balance out J.K. Rowling and all of her bizarre personal vendetta against women. Okay, anyway, back to the show. Chris Cox has the most fascinating job, and the grit that goes into perfecting these tricks and effects, both edible and not, does not go unseen, even if we'll never know how he makes some of these things happen. Chris also tells me in this episode about the most mind-blowing immersive theater experience I've ever heard of. But to do so, he also had to immediately spoil it. It is located in London and hasn't been performed in a few years, so I feel okie dokie personally leaving it in. But when you hear the Penn and Teller reference, because yeah, we got a Penn and Teller name drop on this week's episode. This dude is legit. Just fast forward about 4 minutes and you should be good. All right, I think that's everything. And with that, I give you themed illusions, magic, and more with illusionist Chris Cox. Welcome to Very Amusing.
It's my contractual obligation to be here. Thank you. It's not. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
So we are going to get into some theme parky stuff. But up top, I realized I have no idea how you wound up in this line of work. And I would love to know.
So I remember it very well. I was 11 years old and I was at home here in England. And I got a letter that was delivered by an owl. And then 7 years at Hogwarts, Hufflepuff and proud. And now I'm a mind reader. That's it. That is the answer I prepare, because the real answer is the same as every magician you'll ever ask. It's, how do you get into magic? And it's, well, I got magic kit as a kid, like most people. And then I just sort of kept doing it. And I can't act, dance or sing, but like performing. And therefore, magic was my calling, I suppose, amongst other things. I got into mentalism when I was at school. And I realized that if you mixed magic tricks with mentalism techniques with psychology, and I was learning psychology at school, it felt like more than magic. So that was kind of my real initial into it of all. But yeah, you sort of need a general overview of everything. In fact, the easiest way to explain it is a bit like a chef. So you learn the basic techniques, you learn the ingredients, and then you add yourself to it. And I quite quickly fell down the role of doing mind reading and mentalism, because it's sort of more performance than anything else. And it's the performance and the psychology of that which interests me.
I haven't been lucky enough to see your live show yet because the dates haven't lined up. But you kind of embarrass yourself on stage, it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty much. I sort of feel like magic's an interesting one, because outside of the world of, like, and obviously we'll get into theme park magic, which is a slightly different beast, but in essence, magic is a performance art. And I always feel Seinfeld used to have a good gag and routine about the problem with the magician is, in essence, you're going, look at this stuff that I can do that you can't. That's sort of what you do. So my very much aim on that is to come in as the underdog, and I want people to sort of be going, you know, you're good, you're actually not bad. And the biggest laugh I think I get is, like, the first really good bit of mind reading I do, sort of 4 minutes into my routine, I write down the name of a place and I show it to everyone, apart from the person on stage with me who can't see it. And I say to them, where's the best place you've been on vacation? And they name the place that I've written down. And at that point, everyone goes, and my joke is, and you thought I was going to suck. And that is the biggest laugh in the show, because at that point, everyone still thinks, oh, I think this guy's going to suck.
Now that we have an expert on the show, I want you to tell me how some of this stuff is done.
Okay, so...
Spoil things!
So here's the weird thing about magic, is there's an old phrase, which is, a magician guards an empty safe. Which is true, because the way stuff is done is normally really disappointing and never as good as the actual trick. But sometimes that stuff is really clever and interesting, and you go, oh, it's not as good as the trick, but the fact that that's been worked out is phenomenal. And there also, you know, there are things, you know, the most seen magic trick in the entire world, and also probably the most known about magic trick in the entire world, is a Pepper's Ghost. Purely because of the Haunted Mansion.
Wow, that made Pepper's Ghost the tip-top one?
Yeah, it had been around for a long time, but they were the first people to kind of do it on that scale. And you know, it was in Lord of the Rings, the musical, which was at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane in London about 15, 20 years ago. And they did a Pepper's Ghost, and they literally bring in a massive piece of glass for that one moment where they put the ring on for the first time and they vanish. And it looks amazing. And everyone in the interval goes, oh yeah, it's a bit like the Haunted Mansion. because it's the most seen magic trick in the world, and probably the one people know the most about. But also, the genius of it is when it's reused in other areas and the nuance that's added to it. So it's like in like in it's in Pooh, whichever version of Pooh you've been on, be it the Japan, the much superior Japanese version, or the US versions, that moment of Pooh floating away, that is Pepper's ghost, but done slightly differently from a different angle, and it is lights and mirrors. And so often magic is mirrors and lights and smoke, and it's all of it. All the good stuff is old-fashioned techniques, but adding, ideally, some modern technology to make that better. Often I'll see a trick and be like, oh, this is one or two or three different ways. Normally there's only a few ways to do things. And it's on the Tokyo Disney Sea version of Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, which is not Twilight Zone, obviously there. The Hightower Hotel, where the monkey statue, which has a name, but I can't remember it, disappears.
Yes.
And it is a perfect example of multiple methods working at once. So you've got lighting, you've got some projection on the statue, and then you've got an old-fashioned one. It's possible, like, the thing is, I'm still not entirely sure how it's done, and there's two possible ways to do it. Way one, so the monkey basically lights up, you get a nice light on it, you get a projection effect on its face which makes it look evil and it moves its little mouth, and then the monkey disappears. But because of how the projection effect is on it, there are sort of, it makes me as my magic brain go, okay, you've got two ways of doing this. One is that monkey has got the projection on it until the very last second, and then it is on a really quick release drop into the thing that's below it. So it just drops down. But I watched a YouTube video in night vision on real slow, and I think that's probably what they're doing, but I couldn't entirely work it out. But that's one of the ways of doing it.
You were watching it in night vision?
I found a night vision recording of it and then went frame by frame through it. Because the thing, so here's why I did it. I was like, okay, so it's one of two ways. And yeah. I'm interested in going, if it's the drop down, which I think it is, I then go, what's the redundancy on that drop down? What's, in essence, in theme park terms, what's the B mode? Because sometimes that's not going to work. And the magic brain makes you go, okay, so it's reset position has to be the home position where it's hidden. So therefore, that's what you want it to get to as quick as possible. So if it's above, you then got a drop release and that'll drop down and you weight it, or maybe there's a pulley system or a hydraulic system which pulls it down faster than gravity. It's basically a mini Tower of Terror within the Tower of Terror. Yeah. Is what they've got is they've asked for the ride system, but tiny for the monkey. Or the other option is it's gone before the projection. And they're projecting onto something that's behind it. And there's a technique which has been used for hundreds of years in magic and is still used on many things. It's the basic principle that black on black with light in front of it becomes invisible to the human eye.
Oh.
So you'll see it a lot, used a lot in the Haunted Mansion. And that idea of like, okay, so my thinking on that goes, okay, well, if it could literally span 90 degrees and behind it is just black, it looks like it disappears if you light that correctly, because you have light coming from your front which dilates your pupil, and then black on black becomes invisible.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's a, and that is a, you know, and on a very base level you'll see it in lots of rides, often poorly done because it's a real nuance to getting, it's like literally is there again, I've referenced Seinfeld twice in the show, but it's that Seinfeld gag of between the difference between a winner and a loser in the 100 meters is like just a little head forward or a little head back.
Yeah.
And the same with something looking invisible is, you know, a light 1 centimeter further forward than it should be, or a bit of spill from a light here, or someone's using their cell phone, that can ruin that trick.
Wow. We haven't talked about it yet, but I think we do need to discuss that you have extensively worked in a stage situation and kind of not doing just your own show, but also consulting and working on other performances. I'm not sure, are all those public knowledge, or is that just, I don't want to spoil anything.
I think they're public. I haven't updated my Wikipedia. I mean, Wikipedia hasn't, not that I do it myself, definitely do it myself.
It's the fans, yeah, it's the Chris fans.
Yeah, it's the Chris fans, which is just me. I think it's all out there. So this is part of the joy. This is why I like to, one of the reasons I love theme parks is it's always gives me new ideas. And I, as a performer, perform funny mind reading. That's my shtick. But that's sort of, I can do that. The stuff I do, I've done thousands of times and can literally do it after a 12-hour flight from London to LA and be on stage 2 hours later and do the show and not worry about it. The thing that I love doing these days is consulting on other productions and basically solving their problems using magical techniques. And so that means I'm part of the magic team on Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, on Punch Drunk stuff in London, and Punch Drunk Do Sleep No More in New York, which people might know, on a couple of other plays here, on the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory tour, on this place called Lapland UK, which is part immersive theatre, part theme park experience, part immersive environment thing, and various other like restaurants like Heston Blumenthal's 3 Michelin star Fat Duck restaurant, DC Comics Park Row restaurant, which is sort of Batman, Gotham custom themed. So I go in and create stuff for them. And the difference in the similar world to theme park is I'm creating stuff that I'm not doing. So I know as a performer that I have, when you see me on stage, I've got loads of stuff going on and different routes and paths I will take. So I have to work out how to teach that stuff to actors or create things which can work again and again and again and again and again and again and again.
Okay, you know that feeling that everyone knows something that you don't? For me, that used to be Quince, but no more. Quince is a truly astounding retailer, essentially carrying everything a person on your mood board would wear. We're talking washable silk blouses, chic leather bags, 14-karat gold jewelry, European linen dresses, and the best part of all is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They're up here with $50 Mongolian cashmere sweaters. $50! Beautiful, timeless items you can wear and actually live in. Meaning, you don't have to be scared to bring them on your theme park travels. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And if you're sensitive to retailers like I am, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. But it's not just your everyday work-life clothes. They have everything. I recently joined a new gym, big deal for me, and desperately needed new workout clothes to wear there. It's kind of like an LA gym. Like, you kind of got to look cute. So I ordered a pair of their Ultraform bike shorts and high-rise pocket leggings. And when I tell you, the quality of these leggings is truly on par with brands I paid three times as much for, which really kind of makes me love these three times more. I'm not only going to buy them again, but actually buy the other travel stuff in my cart, because they have things like beautiful pastel suitcases for $129 and these wildly affordable compression packing cubes that I have been waiting forever to buy compression packing cubes, and they're always so pricey, and here, the price fits. So if you want to get ready for work, your new gym, travel, anything in your life, go to Quince. Quince.com/amusing will get you free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Ooh, that's nice for someone who puts stuff off like I do. That's Quince.com/amusing to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/amusing.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at
Because of you, I was able to go to the Fat Duck, which I still owe you a massive present for. So thank you.
You're welcome.
It was wonderful. What is your work like for these places if listeners haven't been to them? And kind of what do you bring to the restaurant? Because I assume the whole culinary program is already set before you come in, or are you involved in those conversations?
It depends where it is and where we're at. So the Fat Duck's a good example. So if you don't know the Fat Duck, it is a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. It once won Best Restaurant in the World. And Heston Blumenthal, whose restaurant it is, kind of was one of the early pioneers of molecular gastronomy and multisensory dining. So a lot of the times where you'll see an exciting new Instagrammable dish that Disney have put on the menu, you'll be like, oh yeah, Heston invented that 20 years ago. That's normally the... So anything you've seen with dry ice or liquid nitrogen, he invented all that stuff. That's like comes from his world and spherification and all those things. But they could only originally work in a fine dining world. And, you know, the Fat Duck, you went, it's like 48 covers at most. So that's the number of people eating. And there are 97 chefs working for those 48 covers.
What?
It is utterly ludicrous.
It's like, I need to explain to you, it's like a small restaurant. It is small.
Yeah, it's in a cottage, which I think it was originally a 1600 century cottage. So also, there's no room anywhere and you can't do anything to it because it's a 16th century cottage. So my involvement for that came one of Heston's, long story short, someone saw me do a show, invited me to do a TV show with Heston. From that, he was like, oh, do you fancy, we're playing with some ideas for The Duck. Do you fancy coming to chat with me about it? And I did. And then they ended up bringing me on board. So because he does multi-sensory dining, my job there was originally to create some effects to go alongside some of the ideas they were thinking of, and ended up being working on turning what was once the menu into a thing called a journey. So it's a theatrical experience, doing a load of research on the things I find interesting in theatre, which is opposite to theme parks to some extent, is that in theatre, people remember the first and the last 10 minutes as a rule. So which is why a show always ends, you know, a musical end on a big clap along number, and you'll go out going, oh, that was good, and you sort of forget the middle, plodded along, you know, like a ride having a really good last couple of seconds, you're like, oh yeah, you know, it didn't end on a low. And of course the problem with dining is your last 10 minutes is normally, whew, that was expensive. So I did a load of research in that, and the first 10 minutes are people wondering, is this going to be worth the money? And we've kind of reinvented that moment. So I put holograms in the fire, literally using Pepper's ghost in the fireplace. We did that, and then I created mind-reading paper, which created liquid nitrogen poached cocktails of the flavor that you were thinking of, despite never telling someone the flavor of it. So the idea being, at the beginning, you're getting these experiences that make you go, oh, I see what's going on here. This is going to be fine. And then we invented the first restaurant to do a ticket system so that you buy your ticket in advance. So when the bill comes, it's not quite as much as you're expecting it to be because you've already paid for a lot of it.
Wait, what? That's how a lot. What? You started that?
Yeah. We started that, yeah. That was like, I don't know how many years ago now. I was, maybe 10, 15 years ago.
God.
Idea kind of just suddenly changed that end dynamic. And then, you know, like I'm talking about nuance and little touches of things, we put in a touch of at the end after that, giving someone a little, everyone would get a little something at the end as a thank you. And I created four different ways of doing the same thing, so no one saw the same thing twice, so you felt like it was exclusive to you. In the same way, like, you know, like the Indiana Jones room that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
It felt different every time.
I
think that's
works.
The name of the ride now. Yeah, yeah. Indiana Jones and the room that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Coming soon to Animal Kingdom. So a good example is the mind reading liquid nitrogen poached aperitifs, where I created the technique that would and taught the waiters and the staff there how to do it so they could read their minds. And then what I realized is, so you would select a drink, you'd think of a drink, and then we'd pour it out from this cocktail shaker, which you'd add stuff in, and then foam would come out of it, and it would taste of your drink. And I had to try it out one day. The Fat Duck was closed for 6 months in the UK and open in Melbourne, in Australia. And I got to a point where I was like, well, the only way I would know this would work in my show is that at this point I would put it on stage and see. So I flew to Melbourne, literally had lunch, checked the trick worked, and flew home. And Melbourne is a 26-hour flight from the UK, so that was the world's most ridiculous. Like, Greta is not happy with me for that flight.
You flew that much to basically just have a drink and then head home.
Yeah, have a drink, go, yeah, it worked, all right, let's go home. But what I realized in doing it is I did it a few times, and one time I did it wrong because I'd flown 26 hours and was jet lagged. Yet the person went, oh yeah, that's a gin and tonic. It was not a gin and tonic. So I realized, I've gone to all this effort and we could have just done anything and said it and people will be like, yeah. But what I realized was better is that it also made me go, oh, the problem with that, of course, is that one person has that experience and everyone else is going, was that it? Yeah, okay. So then we made it so that each flavor was a different color. So I then worked with the chefs and going, can you make these different colors without affecting... So that initial request ended up being like a 3-month R&D process for them.
Oh my gosh. And it seems like they're totally down for that.
Yeah, they love that stuff. And therefore, you get that moment of when it comes out and it's that color, everyone around the table goes, oh! And suddenly that's the moment you're trying to create at this point.
It's so funny to me that what is seemingly the most theme parky of restaurants is also like one of the best restaurants ever.
Yeah, and I think that's partly because this stuff isn't cheap to do.
Yeah.
And you see it in theme parks and you can tell when it's cheap in a theme park and when they've spent a lot of money on it, and or when it needs refurb and they haven't bothered spending that money. And then things like We put a there was a dish which is tastes like sleep. So it was these edible pillows was what it was. And I was like, oh, it'd be good if they floated on a cloud. And they went, yeah, it would be. And then I was tasked with working out alongside a brilliant inventor called Mark Garston, who's an engineer who I worked with on it, to work out how we do that. So therefore you get a cloud which is floating on your table with an edible pillow on it. Because why not, hey? Why not?
Wait, what?
Yeah, you have a, and it's, let me tell you one thing. Obviously you have to train the staff, and it's really difficult to get it right, but because everything about how it works is the opposite of your brain. So in essence, I might as well reveal it. There are many ways you can do those sorts of things. And lots of those ways would work perfectly in a theme park environment where you can control what the audience are doing, your audience being the guests. And ideally, if they're in an Omni mover, you can really control where they're looking. Problem is, you can't control what people around a table are doing. So nearly every method you would use isn't really practical. So the method we invented was a magnetic levitation system, which on its own feels like, oh, well, that's quite straightforward. But then it has to be computer controlled so that it tracks it, so it doesn't fly off and stays in place. So it's originally still more complicated than you would imagine, but then to get it in place so it floats, you have to undo every bit of learning you've ever done about gravity. So when you're placing it in position, you have to, when you feel no resistance, it'll float. If you feel any resistance, it doesn't float. So our whole bodies are trained, when you put something down, you just know there's something, you feel the thing under it, so you know you can put it down. Where this is the exact opposite. When you feel nothing, you have to go, all right, I'll let go, and it will then float.
So like when you think it would fall.
Yes, and just trust the point where you go, now it won't. Now the magnet and the computer will do its job.
This beautiful dish that people have toiled over.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But those first few days of training everyone, we quite quickly were like, we won't do it with the food on it because that's going to go everywhere. But we did it with a set table so we could practice leaning over the table. I reckon we probably smashed about £3,000 worth of glasses before. I was like, oh, maybe we'll take the glasses off. Let's take the glasses off. Because that's the thing, if you put it where, if it's not in the point, it will literally just fly away from you.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then the only way to do it is to practice it. And there are too many variables for it to be I'd love to have a robot from a ceiling drop it down and to be exact, which is what you would probably do in a theme park. But instead, I was like, all right, we'll spend 3 days practicing this.
And since your knowledge spreads through so many different realms, is there anything that theme park fans don't know about that they should know about? Like, if they didn't know about the Fat Duck, is there any other stage or a restaurant or a park they might not know about? Any performance, anything that they should be attuned to that they might not be?
One of the best things I've ever done is a ridiculously titled experience called You, Me, Bum Bum Train. And it's not what you'd think. It's happened a few times in London, and I've been lucky enough to do it 3 times. And in fact, one time I took Teller from Penn & Teller, and he said it was one of the best experiences of his life. I one time took Penn, who said it changed his life separately. They didn't come together. And it is it's the most immersive theater experience. So the whole concept of it is, it's one person does it. You do it solo. And everyone who works on it is a volunteer. So and you basically go through various scenes where you are the star of that scene. So to give you an example, like one of them started, and the first thing you did is they go off, you sign a waiver and they go off, you go, and you go into a room and you just sat there you're in like a flat, an apartment, and there's some kids playing PlayStation. And you're just watching them, you're like, okay, what do I do? And then at one point, one of them turns to you and goes, go through the fridge. You're like, what? And you turn around, there's a fridge, and you open the door of the fridge and there's food in it, and you close it. And then he goes, no, go through the fridge. And now you open it and it's a tunnel. And you walk through that tunnel and you're suddenly in the next room, which is a sauna. And there are these guys planning a bank robbery. And then you go with them and you go out the sauna door and it is a full replication of a UK-based bank and you're doing a bank robbery. And there's actors in there responding to whatever you do. And there's one of them where it was Crufts, which is like is it the Westchester or the Winchester dog show in the US?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. So Crufts is the UK version of that. And there's a room where there's a bit where, you suddenly went into the next room and you're given a dog and it's all done up like Crufts and you run around with that dog.
Wait,
and
a real dog?
A real dog, an actual dog, no animatronics, real dog. And then there was a bit where you go into a TV studio and you get your makeup done and they go, okay, you're on in 3, 2, 1, and you walk through a door and it's a TV studio set up like a talk show. And there is an audience of about 100 people and they've done all the graphics for your name. And
what?
Then you sit down at the desk and the auto cue starts running and you go, all right, well, I'm doing a TV show. And then the brilliance of it is like the night I did it, it's just another actor. But Stephen Fry that year would regularly pop along and you'd go, please welcome my guest, Stephen Fry. And Stephen Fry would then pop out. And you'd be like, what is going on? So I believe it's coming back next year in 2025. If you can get a ticket and you're in London or you can get to London, it is the most life-changing experience because it reminds you that you can do anything. If you put your mind to it, because you just get to a point you go like, all right, I'm doing this. Great. That's me now for the next 4 minutes. I'm doing this scene.
Oh my God.
It is the most nuts. And yeah, it's called Yumi Bum Bum Train and there is nothing like it. And I think, you know, like all the Area 15 stuff, all the Omega Mart stuff, that all exists because of this. I think everything it's sort of started that world. It is crazy.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm going to obviously have to fly over to do that because that sounds incredible. I've never heard of that.
And I remember after it having the weirdest dreams for nights on end because it just totally, like, it's like Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland. You're suddenly here and then you're there. And there was one I remember, this is the nuts thing it did, where you were having a massage on a massage table and then suddenly you start moving. And because you're face down on it, the bit that your sort of face is on suddenly opens up and now you're looking down and you're going over the top of like a tube train carriage and you're just watching these people on the tube and then you go off the other end and then the massage finishes and you're like, what just happened?
This does feel the closest to what dreaming feels like in real life.
Yeah, that's it. And that's the sort of thing where you go, you look at it and go, oh my God, if Disney, if Universal, if even Six Flags, if someone did this, it would be incredible. But then you realize it just doesn't work on any grand scale because if people weren't volunteers, that show would cost you £5,000 per person to go on or something ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's joyous. So when I've done it, I've then gone back and volunteered and been in various scenes. It's like, I was in a chip shop as a person who would order fish and chips from the guest who was coming through, who was doing the experience, and they go and then you do it again. And it's as fun as a volunteer to watch all these people get thrown into these strange environments.
Oh my God, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's utterly wild.
I did want to ask you, and your answer might be just the aforementioned, but if you could create any themed experience, someone gives you a cartoon bag of money with a money sign on it, with your expertise in all these different fields, what would that experience be? Would it be a ride? Would it be a show? If you could had unlimited funds and could do whatever you wanted, what would you do?
So I used to love roller coasters. I still love them, but I'm at the age where I need a little sit down after it. But also, it's like when I'm on tour, I will go and try and... So I was in Miami a couple of weeks ago consulting on a show and flew in a day early to go on Iron Gwazi at Busch Gardens. It was closed all day. Didn't get to go on it.
No!
That was $70 I'll never see again. But went on some other rides, got a headache, had to sit down. Kumba really throws you around these days. But also, it's like I was... In fact, you gave me the advice. I was in Wisconsin Dells on tour and went... this is a total side note to that, but we went to whichever the water park you suggested because it was indoors and it was December. And it had that
probably Wilderness or Kalahari. I think I tried to push
it
towards Wilderness.
The one with the spinny the water slide that you get in and then the thing spins.
That was Mount Olympus.
Mount Olympus. So me, I was like with two of my friends, James and Paul, who are in the show with me. So we were all like, oh, let's go to the water park then. So we all went. And that is the most nuts thing I've ever been on. That is a ride, like that spinny water slide. I've no idea what happened in there. It was crazy and amazing.
For anyone listening, you have seen this on social media. It looks like if three garlic knots were just rotating in space. Like it's just,
that's it.
It's like slides intertwined, just rolling over each other.
And you go into it and then you're going up and then you drop back down and then water, you look up and then all this water is now falling in your ear because you've looked up and then suddenly you're this way. And I got really motion sick at the end of it and had to have a little sit down. It's a general rule of my days at theme parks these days, have a little sit down. And it's nuts. And we just spent the whole time laughing because it was a new experience unlike anything else because you just don't know what's going on.
I am not brave enough to go on that. So I'm very impressed.
It's really worth it because it's totally nuts. Yeah, there's no way of describing it other than nuts. Although what we realized is just after it, we were sort of standing around in the pool chatting about, well, that was so crazy. And then we realized it was a Saturday morning at a water park and we were the only three grown men without children in the whole water park. We're like, oh, maybe we'll... And then definitely that night there were people at the show who were like, aren't those the guys who were half naked at the water park? Yes, yes, that's the same guy, yeah. You can't have the mystique of a magician when they've seen you go screaming down a slide.
Yeah.
But that idea of like something new and unlike, like that is a great example of like stuff combining. So to go back to the original question, I've always liked the idea of, I like stuff where you play with the conceit of what it is. And often the theme park conceit forever is, oh no, it's gone wrong. Turns out we're fine. But I love the idea of you're on something and you're expecting it to be what it is and then it stops. And then it turns into something, as in like you've got to, you're being evac'd or something.
Oh,
and
okay.
At that point, you're like, oh, is this actually the thing? Or and then it goes into, so I'm always loved the original Star Trek experience in Las Vegas, where they played with that idea of you would watch what felt like a pre-show for a simulator and then get beamed up into the ship. So yeah. Something where it is doing, where you're expecting one thing and it becomes something else.
Yes.
And the problem with that, of course, is you can't, you know, the joy of a magic show is at the end of the show and be like, hey, guys, try and keep the secrets because it's sort of not as fun if you know what it is.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and talking about magic and illusions and restaurants and all the other fun things.
Oh, my pleasure. I hope it has been of interest and not too annoying.
Hi, Carly. This is Kayla from Queens. I have a question on behalf of my parents. So my husband and I went on our honeymoon to Japan this past spring, and they're deciding to copy us and try to do our trip too, since we loved it so much. They're doing it slightly differently. They're flying into Beijing, and then they're doing a cruise that sails out of Hong Kong, and then it brings them to southern Japan, goes up and ends in Tokyo. They are, of course, doing a Tokyo Disney, and I'm already talking to my mom explaining how all of that should go, and I pointed her to TDR Explorer. But my sister and I also think that they should be a little bit ambitious about it and do Shanghai and Hong Kong while they are somewhat in the region. My parents have never been anywhere on the Asian continent. They are in their early 60s. They have been to Disneyland Paris and Disney World every single year since I was born, about almost 30 years ago. So they are very Disney experienced. They are adventure travelers. They are fit and they're able to like really do a lot of stuff while they're traveling. So I'm wondering what your recommendations there are, if they should try to ambitiously do all three of the parks while they're there, or if they had to choose between Shanghai and Hong Kong, which should it be, why, and any tips that you have for them. But again, definitely doing Tokyo Disney. So happy you're back. Congratulations, Pearl. Congratulations to your mom. And thank you so much for all your hard work.
Thank you for this call, Kayla, because I am happy. I am pleased to join the chorus of voices telling your parents to just follow your lead and do what you say and go to as many Disney parks in Asia as you possibly can. And I mean, yes, I have an agenda. I run a theme park podcast, for Christ's sake, but still, you are right on the money. They should go to all three parks. Now, it does depend how much time they have in each city, and I'm not entirely sure. I know you mentioned a cruise, which means it might just be one day, which makes things a little tricky. I do think you should see the sights in Hong Kong and Shanghai, of course, but I am going to tell you I don't go to the parks. Like, I want them to have fun, and considering they're seasoned park goers here in the States, it just proves that they'll be that much more tickled and excited to visit these places overseas, because Tokyo, Shanghai, and Hong Kong's parks are very, very different from each other. So they won't double up, really. It's a much different experience across the three. Now, in terms of Shanghai, if you only have one day in Shanghai, annexing most of it for a Disney park is going to be pretty tough. I just think once you're there, because it's so big, the footprint is so large, you're going to end up spending a lot of time there, especially trying to do different things because the crowd there tends to be pretty intense. However, it's just a lot of, there's a lot of people who love to go to Shanghai Disneyland because it's pretty great. But If you are there, there are two things that I would recommend they do. I don't know if they're completionists, but if they're happy to like dip in for a half day and leave, this is what I guarantee they should do. They should absolutely ride pirates. Duh. It's different there. It's wonderful. It's exceptional. But they should do the challenge trails. And I know I've talked about the challenge trails on here before, but because you mentioned that your parents are kind of adventury, they will absolutely flip their lids over this. Basically, and for anyone who hasn't heard me scream about this before, it's Disney rock climbing. You're clipped in. There's like, I forget this, like the harness, the carabiners, all that stuff. And you are doing an activity that I cannot believe Disney Legal signed off on. You're basically climbing through waterfalls. I'm climbing in heights around a mountain. And it's Disney and you're in a Disney park, but it's maybe the most terrifying thing you can possibly do in a Disney park. They will eat it up. I promise they will love it. Have them, if they're not convinced after I yell at them through you to go to the parks, have them look up a video of the challenge trails at Shanghai Disneyland and they will be convinced. As for Hong Kong, the thing is, there's stuff to see in Hong Kong, but I feel like there are more sights and places to see in Shanghai, just from my experience visiting both cities. And I feel like if they have enough time in Hong Kong, they could do the park more easily and just finish before dinner time and be like, we made it, we saw a few things, and then leave at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm also checking the taxi time from Hong Kong, because I remember it being like pretty quickly to get from the park back to the city. I actually, when I visited Hong Kong Disneyland, I extended my trip because I wanted to spend more time in the parks than in Hong Kong itself. I just was having so much fun that I didn't want to leave. And the taxi time is like 7 a.m. in Hong Kong right now. It's going to be about a half an hour, which is not bad at all to take that taxi back. Anyway, if they're already going to do Shanghai, because we're clearly trying to convince them, and they're already doing Tokyo, I mean, they could just spend a few hours in Hong Kong and bing, bang, boom, they got it done. Also, Hong Kong has cheap tickets online. This is one of two things I'm going to yell at them to do. If you go on Klook is kind of like an experience ticket vendor, and they usually have cheap tickets for Disneyland overseas. Their tickets for Hong Kong Disneyland are $57. You can just go for 4 hours, ride Mystic Manor, and be like, we did it, and head out and go on with your day. That is not that much money as in terms of visiting another country and doing an attraction. So keep that in mind. They could just do a ride or two and then leave and be like, we saw it, which is thrilling. But the wild card is that, of course, World of Frozen opens in November. And how are you going to tell them to not go to a brand new Frozen themed land? This one, it looks really good. It looks really good from what I've seen. So I kind of want to have them go so they can report back and tell me how it was. Truly, they gotta go. They gotta go. And to answer your question, if they had to choose between the two, this might be a bit of a shocker, but I'm going to tell them to go to Hong Kong Disneyland. I don't know how the crowds will change once Frozen opens. I don't know how busy they'll be. I know that they have a lot of fans of, Duffy and Friends. So that has been a popular experience at Hong Kong. I went a few years ago, so it was pretty dead there. I'm not going to lie. There's not a lot of people. So it's definitely stepped up since then. But I think they have to go just to see World of Frozen. They have to go to Shanghai to go on the challenge trails. And I think if they're okay with the mindset that they just do a little and then leave, even though it takes a while to get there and back and to get in, yada, 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 I think it'll be worth it. And I think it'll be a really, really fun memory. And I will add that there is this bizarro joy of when you're overseas and you go from foreign theme park to foreign theme park, because you feel you're traveling, you're in another country, they speak another language, and then you're kind of reminded of home. And especially for you, a family who has been to these parks so many times, to just have that dose of like, oh, we're home, but we're somewhere different over and over repeatedly would be very, very cool. I hope they have the best time. Feel free to have them call in if they have any other questions. I'm happy to answer them. Thank you for thinking of me in this journey of getting your parents to go to these places. And I hope they have the best time, whether or not they go, but they should do it. They should do it. They should do it. They should do it. You're already there. You're already there. Just go do it. Okay, bye.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's a show! Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you to my family for working for free. And thank you to Chris Cox for coming on today's episode. You can find all of Chris Cox's links and all of that in the show notes. I don't want to say them out loud. Parents will giggle when they see them. But just head to the show notes for all things Chris. His career is fantastic. All the projects he's been involved in are phenomenal. And you should absolutely check everything he does out. You can rate, review, and follow Very Amusing on Apple Podcasts. And rate and follow us on Spotify. As I say often, it's a lot. Like, when you're doing it, you're just kind of like clicking five stars and you're like, yeah, whatever. It's a huge deal. It helps our podcast get more exposure, get new listeners. When I pitch out some really funky interviews, which I'm doing currently for, I don't know, maybe some celebs, it helps the powers that be see that, like, oh, we're a legit podcast. We're not always just one woman in her office filled with toys screaming about theme parks, which we also do. But hey, who says you can't be two things at once, right? Women can have it all. You can give us a call at 747-CHURROS, leave us a voice note, or email it to 747-CHURROS @gmail.com. I said leave us a voice note. I'm supposed to say you can text us a voice note. You can text us a voice note. Basically, just yell into a phone, yell into a computer, send it to me. We got it. We are doing a Churros Hotline episode soon. So if you have a question you've been sitting on and you've been like, I don't want to call, I don't want to record it, just call in. It's okay if you have to call a few times to get the wording right, if you babble too much. I am in the babbling profession. So see? So just call it in and we will do everything we can to answer your question, address your concern, or just gab about what you're saying. You can buy Very Amusing merchandise at very-amusing.com. And you can follow me at Carly Wiesel on all them platforms. And join the Fomaly at facebook.com/group/Carly Wiesel. The Fomaly is really just a wonderful place. It's just a bunch of people talking about life, talking about theme parks, talking about Starbucks, talking about morning coffee, talking about family, talking about holidays. It's great. It's great. It's great. And use it as a resource, because a lot of people are asking each other theme park questions and providing really good answers. This episode was edited analytically by Jeff Fox. Thanks so much for listening. See you real soon.
Hi, sweetie. It's Mom. I have my voice pretty much back, so I'm very excited because I sound much better. Great episode. I love Shelby's attitude. She's got a great job, big title. She was a lot of fun to listen to. Now, Gatorland, I have never heard before in my whole life. I mean, it sounds okay, but for me, with my anxiety, the main attraction are gators jumping up and down for chickens. Like, yikes, like, don't sign me up for that. But the emus sound pretty cute. But live gators, I'm a little leery, you know? I have to think about that, bringing the little one. But if a bear can get into Disney, an alligator could have. I don't want to talk about it. Never mind. It was a great episode. I don't know if I'm going to be going there anytime soon, but you can tell me all about it. I love you. I love you, Pearl, and I'm going to be there in less than 48 hours. So maybe we will go to Gatorland. We'll see. I love you. Bye.